Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Episode 15, Mike, back from the extended holiday break, I guess is what you can call it.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year, everybody around the world, the UK, the United States, wherever you're listening, around the globe. We appreciate it. It's 2019 now. We were trying to record sometime last week or within the last couple of weeks, but, you know, the holiday plans always jump in the middle of everything. So it's like, well, might as well take a little bit of a break. But we're back. We're back in the first episode of 2019. And we're actually, this episode is going to be about the annual awards. We were debating this, whether we should give awards or not, just because, you know, we are kind of a newish podcast. How long have we been on now? 6 months?
Yeah, around there. 6 months.
Just about half a year. But, you know, we decided to go through some categories, and we're going to choose our favorites of 2018. So, I mean, obviously, you know, we reference the big ones like Ring Magazine, and then ESPN chooses their stuff. So, you know, they're the reputable ones, at least, or at least those are the ones that people look at, you know?
I mean, if the Ring and ESPN are choosing Danny, then we have to pick.
We have to pick. We're right there.
Exactly.
We're right there. So, you know, but when people say like, oh, ESPN, the Ring, and the Last Round, that's what I'm looking at.
I always hear them in the same breath.
It's all the same breath. It's all the same breath. But we're back. First episode of 2019, episode 15 of the Last Round. Let's just jump right into it. Prospect of the year. Who do you got, Mike?
Born in New York, raised in South Florida, now fights out of Las Vegas. I'm going to go for Teofimo Lopez.
The Fortnite fighter.
So, to me, you know, he's just had a good year, still unbeaten. He's got those, he talks well, he looks good, he's flashy, he's got the dance moves, he's got those, you know, those early, like, 45-second finishes like he got against Mason Maynard recently. I think the only downside, really, for him so far, he's not managed to pick up any belts, but I'm thinking a big 2019 for Teofimo in the top ranked team. I can see him, you know, picking up probably some minor belts. And the only downfall to, not him really, but the division he fights in, is it's crazy hard.
It is.
You know, he's got some big names, skillful people in those divisions. Obviously, if he stays, I think he's going to stay at around 135, but in a recent interview, I think he said he was actually looking at maybe going up to 140 eventually. I think
he's only 21. Like he's still a young guy. I think if you look at it this way, okay, he fights at lightweight, 135.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, Mikey's there. Mikey Garcia, Lomachenko.
Linares is up and down, isn't he, between?
Linares is up and down.
Mm-hmm. Javante?
Oh, Javante's now at 135, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's got some competition.
That's his only problem. It's a hard division. I know, obviously, you know, he's got a lot of faith in himself. He talks well. He says that, you know, he's not scared of, you know, Lomachenko. That's actually a fight he's looking forward to down the line. So, I mean, he's got the amateur pedigree, 170 wins and only 20 losses as an amateur. He won the 2015 National Golden Gloves title, went to the Olympics, and obviously as a pro, looked unstoppable so far. I think, was it 11 wins, 9 by KO. So he's definitely somebody I think this year we should be looking at having a standout year.
I think I'm going Lopez too. I know we talked about a couple different prospects. You know, we threw in Ryan Garcia, Golden Boys Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney. But I'm going Lopez too. And it's not that they all didn't have, like, you know, I guess in a sense, successful years. You know, in terms of their stock going up, that's not it at all. But I think if you look at the entire package, in terms of exposure, wins, how they got wins, and then, you know, the publicity, I think Teofimo Lopez I mean, Ryan Garcia is there, obviously, but Teofimo, I think, with that, when he did that Fortnite dance,
he's got the full package.
Yeah, I think that really put him on the map because, like, that a bunch of media outlets picked that up.
Exactly.
Picked that up because that's a mainstream video game that's being played right now. So,
someone who ran it close for me, and obviously I'm a big fan of, and I think you know Danny, was Virgil Ortiz Jr.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about him. That's right.
And I think, like you just kind of pointed, I think the one thing that I feel that he lacks is Top Rank have kind of chosen Teofimo Lopez and kind of been like, hey, this is our guy for the future.
Yeah.
Let's push him forward. Mm-hmm. And I think that, to me, Virgil Ortiz is a better prospect naturally than Ryan Garcia. But because Ryan Garcia has that Instagram following,
well, that's
Golden Boy have kind of pushed him forward.
Yeah.
But to me, in terms of actual skill and being a boxing prospect for the future, Virgil Ortiz beats him hands down.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't think any logical boxing fan would disagree with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, it's a business. And Ryan Garcia, as you know, is selling tickets in a sense. You know, he's got the popularity. He's got the social media following that just keeps growing and growing. You know, he fought on the Canelo card recently. And... you know, they interviewed who was ringside, the Jonas Brothers, those singers.
Yeah.
And they talked about him when they interviewed him ringside, like, oh yeah, I just caught the Ryan Garcia fight. He did good. Like, you know, he's being noticed.
People at work actually asked me.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, hey, you're a big boxing fan. What's that guy that, you know, was on? And he's a good looking dude.
And that's exactly what you want when you have a business, especially in boxing. Is casual fans start noticing who's this person? If that's what they're getting, like Golden Boy's hearing that, like, oh yeah, these casual fans, like, hey, who's this Ryan Garcia guy? Who's this kid? Oh, you know, he's Golden Boy, he's undefeated, you know, they're pushing him up, and you know, so far he's doing good. You know, he needs to improve a little bit on his skills, but you know, that's the nature of the game. That's the nature of the game. I mean, I think in terms of mainstream publicity, I think Ryan has a big edge over guys like Teofimo Lopez,
Virgil Ortiz,
of course. You know, Devin Haney and guys like that.
Shakur Stevenson, he was another one.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you don't hear people. I mean, who is somebody really going to ask you? Maybe sooner or later, but is somebody really going to ask you, like, oh, at work? Oh, who's that Teofimo Lopez kid?
Yeah. Oh, well,
I mean, eventually.
Maybe the guy with the Fortnite dance, like when he did that, because, you know, like on Twitter, like you kind of touched on, that was everybody. Obviously, all the people who play Fortnite probably don't even know who he is, but they saw the dance. Because obviously, hashtag Fortnite.
Right.
Hashtag Fortnite dance, you know, all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, a lot of people saw that, like in the mainstream who don't even know boxing. They just saw it and say, hey, that's funny.
But the thing that gives Ryan Garcia the edge in terms of popularity. And in terms of prospect of the year, I think we, like we just said earlier, we both agree that Teofimo Lopez takes it. Mm-hmm. I think we're in agreement in that. But in terms of stardom, popularity, business-wise, in terms of dollar signs, Ryan Garcia has that locked in right now.
And then going to the Canelo camp, that can't help. Yeah. That can't, you know.
Yeah, and it also, like, I mean, it doesn't hurt at all. It doesn't hurt his career that he fights under the same promotional banner than the biggest star in boxing, Canelo Alvarez. And he just fought on DAZN under Canelo's card, which was also televised. And, you know, people noticed him. And that technically was his first. I mean, I know he fought on some other Canelo cards at T-Mobile Arena with the Triple G card and stuff like that. But in terms of, like, attention and, you know, exposure, I think this DAZN card at Madison Square Garden for Canelo against Rocky Fielding was kind of like his coming out party in terms of, like, okay, people are going to see me now in terms of exposure. You know, and like, but like we mentioned, in terms of skills, yeah, Virgil Ortiz wipes the floor with him. You know, Ryan still needs a lot of work.
Yeah.
A lot of work.
You know, obviously the problem is for, like, Virgil, he hasn't, Golden Boy haven't backed him to the hilt, you know, like, hey, this is our guy. This is the guy for the future. To me, I think, you know, in the background, he's quietly doing his work. Obviously, he moved camp from Joe Diaz to Robert Garcia in 2018. Yeah.
He's in Riverside now.
But I think I think eventually he's going to be the big guy for Golden Boy if that's where he stays.
Well, I think that's what they're hoping for. But I mean, you know, is he really going to make the money?
He might not make the money because of the following, like you touched on. Obviously, you know, you sell tickets or you sell, you know, views, you sell likes and stuff like that now in the 2019 era that we're in.
That's the nature of the game.
But with Virgil Ortiz, he sells a good fight and he sells a knockout.
No, absolutely. I agree with that.
You know, that's the thing is with Ryan Garcia, eventually down the line when they throw him in there with the big guys, that he can't avoid them anymore because if he's standing in the rankings,
right,
eventually he's going to get caught and he doesn't look like he likes to take a punch.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they got to tread lightly with Ryan. You know, he's nowhere close to fighting any of the elite guys at his weight class. But I think they know that. I think that's why they've told him, like, hey, you know, you got to go train with the Reynosos. You know, we got to spark something into you and figure it out, which is a great move. I mean, you know, giving him the benefit of the doubt, this last fight, like we touched on it a couple episodes ago, he did well. He was patient in that fight against, what's his name, Braulio Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up, you know, stopping him. So I mean, there, you know, there's good stuff coming for, you know, all these prospects that we mentioned. Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia, Virgil Ortiz, Teofimo Lopez. But I think, you know, like mentioning it again, like a broken record, Teofimo Lopez, I think, is the overall prospect of the year.
What do you think of so far? I put something on the last round Twitter the other day. Is the rumors are for 2019. Obviously, so far, Teofimo's got Diego Magdaleno, 31-2 and 13 KOs. That's for sure on February the 2nd.
Diego or Jesse?
He's fighting Diego. Not Jesse. He's fighting Diego.
Okay.
And then in the summer, they're talking it's maybe Ray Beltran. It may be just TBA at the minute. And then they're hoping by the end of the year, he's going to hopefully be in with Jose Pedraza. That's a big year.
That's a big year. At 21 years old, that's a big year. But I mean, look at guys like Gervonta Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Davis ridiculously stopped Pedraza.
But then he looked like a different guy when he fought Linares. Sorry, when he fought Lomachenko.
Yeah. He actually put on a pretty decent fight. Oh, man. I mean, that's, I don't know. I just hope with Teofimo Lopez that they don't pull the trigger too soon on him, even though he is looking good. He's looking really good. Don't get me wrong, but you know, don't throw him in there with the wolves so fast.
He's walking the walk, you know.
Yeah,
he definitely is. He's all the stuff that he says, all the crazy things that he comes out with, and you know, obviously having his dad in this corner, you know, he's not scared to kind of tell you what he's thinking. But when he gets in there, quite a lot of the time, even though he's on the undercard, he's the one people are talking about when they're going away, leaving the arena.
Right.
Which is what he says at the minute, which is what he's trying to do. He's not main eventing those events. But when you're walking out, you're always going like, hey, dude, that Diego Fimo guy, he did the crazy dance. He finished Mason Maynard and he put the guy to sleep when he knocked him out and, you know, face planted the floor, stuff like that. He's always somebody that's hitting the headlines.
Yeah. And you know, we'll get to that later. We'll touch on that later. But you're right. I agree 100%. So, I mean, if that's true, what's being rumored, that they want to match him with Pedraza at the end of the year, maybe Ray Beltran. I can see him beating Ray Beltran just because Beltran's essentially done. Like, and it'd be a good name on Lopez's resume because Beltran, you know, is a former world champion. He just had a title. You know, and he lost it to Pedraza. So I think a guy like Pedraza is a huge step for him. But if he fights Magdaleno, Diego Magdaleno, beats him with like no trouble, and they put him against Beltran in the summer, and he beats Beltran with no trouble, or, you know, it just comes natural to him, then put him against Pedraza. You know, of course, I think obviously Top Rank is going to wait to see his performances in the next two fights.
Mm-hmm.
Because Pedraza is still a really great fighter. You know, he'll give anybody a fight, you know. So especially, you know, I know he, I know he lost to Lomachenko, but Lomachenko didn't stop him, and he was still, if you actually watch the fight from like a scientific standpoint, Pedraza was actually doing pretty good against Lomachenko last year. Now that it's 2019. But you know, if Lopez actually like beats Pedraza, if it gets to that point, man, like he seems like he's a real deal now, but if he beats a guy like Pedraza, assuming Pedraza is like not shot, like in terms of, you know, his talent.
I suppose it depends on who top rank match Pedraza with between now and then, because from the rumors I'm hearing, obviously it's going to be towards the end of the year. So, you know, Pedraza is probably going to fight once or twice between that time. So depending on what's happened to him, you know, with the Lomachenko fight, whether he just comes out, has a couple of,
I mean, how's couple it gonna, of warm-up fights. How's it going to work if, because Lomachenko is at 135. He's got a couple titles.
Mm-hmm.
Teofimo Lopez is at 135.
At the minute, his last interview, he said that he told Top Rank, hey, I want Lomachenko. If I'm not going to wait around.
They're not going to put him against Lomachenko. Not anytime soon.
So whether they're just blowing smoke, you know, and they're just saying that to get the publicity, or whether, you know, him and his dad actually want to fight Loma for some reason, they think they've got his number.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or whether he's just, you know, he's coming through the ranks and he knows that by saying those sorts of things, he's gonna gather attention.
Top Rank would never let that happen. At least not anytime soon.
Well, I said two of their money cows, isn't it?
Yeah.
Their cash cows.
Like and taking into account that Lomachenko's not just a cash cow, but he's also, you know, arguably pound for pound the best in the world. And Teofimo Lopez is the future for them. He's 21 years old, and you know they're putting their stock into him. So obviously they know, like, okay, we can ride his wave for a pretty long time. And if they feed him to Lomachenko, even if in the next like 2-3 years, like, well, what happens? I mean, yeah, you can recover from a loss, but they're not going to match them up. And I don't think it's going to be Lomachenko who's going to be moving up, because Lomachenko's already a small guy at 135. It's going to be Lopez moving up to 140, if anything.
Yeah, he said he wants to go to 140. He doesn't want to wait around. He says that the way that his body is, the older he's getting and filling out.
Yeah.
He says that, you know, he's been at that weight category for a while, so he thinks he's going to have to move up. And there was even talk of him in a recent interview saying that maybe 147 down the line, but that's kind of a stretch, I think.
Yeah. I mean, down the line, yeah. He's only 21.
Yeah.
He's only 21. So down the line, I could see him going up to 147.
I mean, that's where over the last few years, that's where the money fights have been.
Yeah. So. I mean, I think everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Between 147 and 154. Actually, 147 and 160 now. I mean, that's kind of where the money fights are at in a sense. But yeah, Top Rank will not match him and Lomachenko up. Not anytime soon. Not anytime soon. I'm talking about years.
You heard it here first.
They're not. So they know that, you know, yeah, Lopez is obviously showing some talent, and he's got a good wave going, but Lomachenko's on a different level. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But, you know, I'm expecting pretty big things again in 2019 from Teofimo Lopez, especially since, you know, they have that deal with ESPN. They're fighting on ESPN, and, you know, they get a couple million viewers each fight.
Mm-hmm.
I think their most watched fight was it Crawford or was it Lomachenko? I think it was a Crawford fight.
Was it the Crawford Benavidez or the Crawford Horn, maybe?
No, I think it was Crawford Benavidez.
Was it that was a good fight?
Yeah, I think that was their most watched fight on ESPN. Which I was surprised about, because I thought it would be Lomachenko. Like Lomachenko Linares or something, but hey, you know, they're getting, I think that Crawford fight Benavidez did like, I don't know, 2-point-something million viewers, or I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Which is good for the sport, obviously, you know. It just depends.
Oh, yeah.
It depends on what's on that weekend. You know, obviously in America, you have so many sports. You've got the basketball, college football, and stuff like that, which are kind of still, you know, the mainstream things. You know, back home in England, you got soccer and boxing. That's
soccer.
About it.
You mean football?
Football. Sorry, football. Yeah, I forgot.
Our British listeners from the over there in the UK, you know, you're one of your own, just called it soccer.
No.
That means he's.
I always said I was never going to do that as well.
That means he's Americanized. He's been over here way too long. You guys got to take him back. One day we're going to go over there, and we're going to do a live show of the last round in England, over there in Britain somewhere. So you just got to figure out the spot, because that's your.
That would be messy.
that's your neck of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
So one day we're going to go cover a fight over there at Wembley or Copper Box Arena or somewhere. And we're going to do a show live there in front of people, you know, I take questions and everything while we're on air. That would be pretty cool. That'd be pretty cool. All right, next category. Upset of the year. What do you got?
Think. See, this was a hard one. I was looking at Josh Warrington beating Lee Selby, Maurice Hooker coming over to England and beating Terry Flanagan in his backyard. Obviously, we had Alvarez knocking out Sergey Kovalev. No one really expected that.
That was big.
HBO had put all their money in Kovalev. And,
yeah.
You know, we're kind of backing him because they were thinking, right, we can do him. Then we can do Bivol.
Yeah.
Rob Brandt against Ryota Murata. But eventually, down the line, I ended up going with Dogbe against Navarrete. Is that how you pronounce it, Danny?
I think so. Or not? Yeah, you could say it like that. There's different ways.
So obviously, you know, Dogbe took the title, had a chance to kind of pick who he wanted to defense against in his first one.
Yeah,
he ended up picking Emmanuel Navarrete.
That was a shocking result.
Yeah, he came in, I believe he was 20-1 underdog. Even his corner kind of admitted afterwards that we picked him. We underestimated him. We had Isaac doing too many media days. He was didn't get enough chance to train. They didn't realize how big and how powerful he was. Navarrete came in there and just handed, you know, put the smackdown on Isaac Dogbe.
Do you think it's like... I don't know. I mean, yeah, obviously he probably looked at Navarrete as a maybe like a showcase opponent.
I think it was supposed to be a showcase.
Do you think Top Rank, like, you know, when they made the deal with him, like, oh, you know, yeah, he's good talent, but, you know, you can beat him and you'll get the win and then we'll match you up with whatever later on down the road. Like, and then maybe it just got to his head and, you know, because Dogbe's still a good fighter and, you know, and obviously he came in with his native, like rituals, whatever he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept repeating that phrase.
Neho, neho.
Yeah, he kept saying that the whole time and, you know, kept doing his thing and he was like, he was on it. And I don't know, man, maybe he was just too preoccupied with everything else.
I mean, his dad obviously is his trainer and he said afterwards there was too much media. They underestimated Navarrete coming into the fight. And I think, you know, we did a show obviously before the fight and it looked like on paper that Navarrete was one of those guys that they just said, hey, he's coming out of Mexico. You know, he's got a really good kind of like padded out record. This is going to look good on Dogbe's resume.
Yeah, in terms of numbers.
Yeah, in terms of numbers, because he was something like 20. I should have really checked beforehand, but he was like, I think he was like 22-0 or 22-1 or something like that.
Yeah, in terms of record, it was pretty solid. Yeah. But I mean, who did he fight before? That's why people like, did they really take him seriously?
Exactly, because, you know, not everyone looks into that. They just look at his record and like, oh, this guy's unbeaten. You know, he must be good.
Yeah.
They don't look into it like we do. Look at BoxRec and who's he actually fought, you know? Who's actually fought that has a winning record?
Right.
So, you know, Dogbe gets in there, then the guy looks huge. The guy looks like he should have been in a weight category or two.
Maybe
or
two. I thought two when I saw it. I was like, man, he shouldn't be in that weight class. But, I mean, it's like Ray Vargas fighting at 122.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like, well, if you can make it and you got a world title, that's where you're going to make your money. Like, you know? I mean, whatever. You know, normally I would agree with you, but I'm going a different route this time. I'm going for upset of the year, Tony Harrison and Charlo.
Ah, look, the latest one, the December one.
Yeah. I'm going for that one because, you know, and it's not saying that all these other ones weren't upsets. Warrington Selby, you know, Navarrete, Dogbe, but I don't know, man. I think I'm trying to look at the whole picture in terms of hype, you know, investment, stock.
But do you think being
on Fox, first broadcast on Fox for PBC, Tony Harrison upset, is that Jermell? Jermell, yeah, Jermall's at 160. He upset.
Do you think he won though?
You know what? I've watched it twice.
Mm-hmm.
It was a close fight in terms of how you watch it. I don't know. Do you look at it as Charlo was just, both Charlos essentially, but do you look at it as Charlo was just missing a step or was Harrison just, you know, on par with keeping him honest?
I thought Harrison did really well. I thought it was a really close fight. And I was kind of surprised that he got the decision, you know, because normally they say you have to beat the champion, you have to beat the champion really
well. Do you
really
agree with that, though? Like, I don't know.
It's an annoying saying, but, like in a lot of close fights, that tends to be the way that they go. And also as well, it was just kind of surprising because it was a BBC show and the Charlos were kind of the money guys in that division. So I was surprised. I was like, oh my God, he actually got the decision.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think you can even see it in his face. He was like surprised, like his reaction. And then when you watch it over again, it's on YouTube. I think it's on Fox YouTube or even PBC, their YouTube channel. When they announce that he won, when Jimmy Lennon Jr. announces that he won and says and knew, the female interviewer for Fox who did the post fight interview, she's in the back right hand corner of the shot. And as soon as they say and knew, her mouth just drops, like she's just in complete shock, like, oh my God, this wasn't supposed to happen, you know? And, you know, the thing that really kind of irritated me about that, though, was that Harrison, after the fight, when he was doing his post-fight, he gave respect to Charlo and said, look, you gave me a shot, I'll give you an immediate rematch. Like, you know, you gave it to me, I'll give it back to you. You know, let's run it again. Like, you know, he was, you know, he didn't have to say that. He could have been like, nah, like, bring on whoever, you know, let me fight Lara or something, you know, let me fight Hurd again. Let me try unify. But, you know, he gave him the respect and Charlo just shut him down. He was just like, nah, forget that. You know, I won. And it's just like, oh, come on, man. Yeah. And it's funny, if you really listen to it, as soon as Charlo says that and he kind of gets negative on Harrison, Harrison's like, what? He's like, oh, forget that. Then bring on Hurd. He's like, I want to fight Hurd again. So I thought it was kind of funny, but, you know, I mean, I get it. In terms of, you know, Navarrete, Dogbay, all that stuff, like that would be my close second. That may be like 1B, and then Harrison, Charlo is 1A, because I'm trying to look at the totality of it. They had so much stock into the Charlo brothers. I know Jermall Charlo won his fight, but even his fight was tough.
Close, yeah.
Even his fight was tough. Yeah, I'm going Harrison over Jermall Charlo. And they're obviously going to fight again. Charlo even said it was in the contract. He's like, oh, yeah, there's going to be a rematch within 4 months. So, you know, does Charlo take the belt back? Probably.
Yeah, I think he would on a rematch. I think he just maybe needs to change his style a little bit, because I thought that Charlo was just thought he had the victory because he was being more aggressive. But the thing to me is I thought Harrison was landing the crisper, harder punches.
Yeah.
I think where Charlo fell down is he just thought that if I go in there and I try to kind of, you know, march him down and just be aggressive, that was going
to
be enough.
I think that's what he was trying to do.
To me, which didn't work, because if you've got a keen eye, you could watch Harrison and watch his movement and you can just see that he was kind of, you know, getting away, landing the crisp, hard punches and getting out the pocket a little bit.
Yeah.
But Charlo was just trying to, like, you know, rough him up and just march him around the ring.
Yeah. He was trying to walk him down, but Harrison was essentially outboxing him.
Yeah, and to me, I think sometimes, you know, that's where the judges fall down, because they sometimes look at what Charlo's doing, which they didn't that night, and they say, like, oh, he's been aggressive, you know, he's controlling the fight.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily right.
No. Well, look at Mayweather. Look at Mayweather. For the longest time, Mayweather, he accustomed judges, at least in Vegas, obviously, to kind of adapt to watch how he fights, in a sense. So, like, Mayweather was never really the type of guy to walk you down, especially like the last 7-8 years of his career. Because he's a defensive fighter.
Exactly.
You know, he kind of fought off his back foot, but he countered you. So he waited for you to come in and he countered you. So, you know, was he the aggressor in those fights? Not really. I mean, he was a counterpuncher.
Yeah, that's all he did.
Look at the knockout he did against Ricky Hatton in, what was it, 2009, 2010? It was one of those check hooks in the corner. Ricky Hatton comes forward into the corner at him, tries to swing at him, and then Mayweather moves to the right, or is it to the right or to the left? And I think he gets him with like a check hook, left hook.
The Canelo fight, that's 12 rounds.
Yeah, Canelo was walking him down, or the trying whole to walk, fight. Trying to walk him down the whole time, but Mayweather was still touching him.
Yeah.
Still touching him. So
that's why it's called the sweet science.
Exactly. Thing. Exactly. So, you know, people you know, this whole word of robbery and like, especially after that Charlo Harrison fight, like, oh, that was a robbery. This is like, oh man, that this sort of robbery is becoming, you know, that's the thing we got to get used to in terms of now that fights are becoming more mainstream, which is great. I'm all for it. But one downfall is that all these fights on Fox, even DAZN, you know, all these ESPN and all that stuff, you're going to get a lot more casual fans watching, which is like I said, I'm all for it. But one downfall is that they don't have the keen eye that, you know, like me and you do, or other boxing people in the business. So they're going to say, oh, well, it was a robbery and this, and that. I mean, was Harrison Charlo a robbery? I don't think so. But it was an upset. So, you know, you're going with Navarrete over Dogbe. I'm going with Harrison over Charlo. So we agree to disagree?
I think we do.
And now, moving on, trainer of the year. What do you got?
To me, his fighters are taking over. They took over 2018 and 2000.
I know who you're about to say.
You know who? Just for the listeners, no, we actually didn't go over who. We kept it a secret from each other.
We did.
Who was picking what? So, bro, you're actually finding now. So, in 2018, he ended up having a lightweight champion. He ended up having the cruiserweight champion. And then at the end of the year, he got the light heavyweight champion, Anatoly Lomachenko.
I'm on board. I'm just going to throw it out there right away. I'm on board.
He doesn't think he trains him. Then he Teddy Atlas trains. I'm thinking of the Ukrainians.
Yeah, yeah. Well, either way, even if you're taking that away, like he still has a great stable.
Yeah.
That's the thing. He still has a solid freaking stable. You know, these Ukrainians are just taking over the world now in terms of boxing.
But his two, Usyk and Lomachenko, just to kind of go back to it, obviously Lomachenko, probably one of the pound-for-pound greatest fighters at the minute. And then Usyk, by the end of the year, unified the cruiserweight division, maybe going up to the heavyweight division. And he's another buddy that, would you say that in the top five, if you were going to name your pound-for-pound, Usyk would probably be in the top five?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so I mean, just the absolutely. Fact he's got two people like that.
I mean, like, I don't want to go into pound for pound right now, but I mean, Usyk can arguably be in the top three.
Yeah, obviously, depending on who you speak to.
Yeah.
He's going to be there. And then another thing that I always feel plays into people's minds is how recently the person's fought. Mm-hmm. You know, if you watch a fight and then the next day you're like, hey, you know what? He's the pound for pound best in the world because, you know, he's kind of fresh in your mind.
Well, that's the thing that kind of like, you know, especially with Crawford and Lomachenko when they fight and they do their thing. Like, oh, yeah, Crawford, definitely pound for pound best in the world. Lomachenko fights. Oh, yeah, Lomachenko, number one, pound for pound, pound for pound. I think the fact that people keep going back and forth and stuff like that or with whoever kind of makes you appreciate like guys like, I mean, who was the last undisputed pound for pound number one without any argument?
Without any argument, Floyd. But then Floyd. People always argued that against him because he was Floyd.
No, but it was Floyd.
Yeah,
it was Floyd. Like people, regardless of what they thought about him, well, he is the best.
Mm.
You know, and it wasn't because he was knocking out guys like here and there and stuff like that. It was just because every person he's fought, you know, at least throughout the last, you know, 10, 11 years of his career, you know, from young to old to middle age or from world champ, former world champions or whatever thing, he made them look like they were 10 levels below him.
Yeah.
You know?
Look, if anyone, you know, it's kind of new to boxing and the listeners to this, like, go back and watch the, you know, the Canelo fight.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know people he's say schooled. Like Canelo was like, oh, he's only 21, 22. And I get it.
But at the time, though, before the fight, people were like, hey, he's the young dog. He's huge compared to Mayweather.
Right, right.
But then after the fight, you know, they turn around and say, yeah, he was too young.
Well, yeah. I mean, and maybe he was too young. But I mean, like, he had fought guys like, he fought Mosley a couple years before that. I know people, oh, Mosley's old. And, well, I mean, like, at that moment, I think he fought Mosley, I think, within like a year or a year and a half that Mosley defeated Margarito. I think it was. It wasn't too far from that, and Mosley demolished Margarito. So, you know, and then Canelo had fought. Did he fight like guys like Lara and those guys before Mayweather?
Ooh, I think Lara was.
Was it after?
I think it might have been after. Good question though, because that does seem like a while ago.
Yeah, I mean he fought. I mean people you don't realize that, but he fought guys like Lara and stuff. And I think I've seen past interviews where like Golden Boy didn't want him to fight guys like Lara and
yeah, that was true. Oscar told him, you know, you don't want any part of him at that time.
Yeah,
thinking it was too early in his career. But yeah. that was a close fight though.
No, it was a close fight. Yeah. But that also gives you the respect for Canelo at such a young age. He's like, no, give me these guys. These are the best guys. These are who I want to fight. And even if it was a close fight, people disagree. Like, oh, Lara should have got it, or Canelo should have got it, or you know, it was kind of like a confusing decision in a sense, or controversial is a better word.
So 2012, he fought Shane Mosley, and then Jose Cito Lopez. Then 2013, Austin Trout, then Floyd, and then Angulo, and then Lara.
Okay, so Lara was after, but he fought Austin Trout before Floyd. And that was a pretty difficult fight for him too, because Trout gave him a fight, and Trout at that point was pretty solid, like you know, kind of in his prime in a sense.
And then Kirkland, Cotto, Mir Khan, there's some names: Liam Smith, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., Golovkin, and then obviously.
I mean, in terms of skill, yeah, I know people say like, oh, Canelo fought a lot of smaller guys, Khan and. Whatever. I mean, how did we go from Anatoly Lomachenko to Canelo? But, you know, in terms of skill, you know, Canelo's fought some pretty great fighters. I mean, Khan was essentially beating him before he got knocked out. But anyways, that's a random tangent that we go from Trainer of the Year to talking about Canelo and Floyd. I mean, we talked about Floyd being pound for pound, and then it, you know, kind of went down the rabbit hole. But it's all right. It's all right. But I agree. Anatoly Lomachenko. Like I said, these Ukrainians, man, I don't know what the hell is in their freaking milk or their cereal or whatever they're eating.
Just those like unusual training methods he has, like we touched on when we had the Fitzsmith in here.
He needs to come back.
A few weeks back. You know, I've been up to Lomachenko's training camp and seen him, you know, doing those different things, the hand-eye coordination where they have the computer with all the spots on the wall, and he kind of, you know, presses go, and then he has to try and hit the pads, see how many he can get, having the ball attached to a hat and just punching the tennis ball. Then obviously you've seen Usyk with, you know, he has the coins, drops the coins and catches the coins, all to, you know, keep the mind and eyes coordinated.
Yeah.
Training, getting himself fatigued, and then playing chess, you know, all these sorts of things. If you've never come across him, you know, he's good just to, you know, YouTube and see all the unusual different training methods that he has, Usyk, and obviously his son, Lomachenko, do. Vasyl Lomachenko.
Yeah.
Very different.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But hey, you know, I mean, it's obviously working.
Yeah, exactly.
It's obviously working. I mean, like, you know what I want to know is that how many fighters now or young fighters or parents who want their kids to grow up to be fighters, especially in the Ukraine, are putting their sons or even daughters into ballet now because of Lomachenko.
Yeah, in that area, you know, the Ukraine and Russia, where I'm sure he's huge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I bet people are. Just due to the fact that, you know, it's given him such good feet to get in and out of the pocket and dance around his opponents that, you know, there's methods behind the madness.
That's insane.
You know, you can see, I mean, him and Usyk, like you've seen Usyk with his crazy dancing videos, you know, as a joke that he does on Instagram. But, you know, that big guy can move.
Oh, yeah. For a light heavyweight.
Yeah.
He can kill it. He can kill it. You know, they talked about Usyk moving up to heavyweight and all this stuff. But, you know, that's something we can touch on later. But I think he can do it.
I think he can do it.
Like 6'1"?
He's tall, as you know. I think he must be somewhere between 6'1 to 6'3, I'd guess. But I think, you know.
I think him and like a Povetkin.
Yeah, exactly. Some of the smaller heavyweights, I think, you know, he'll deal with because he's so agile that they're going to be so slow that he's going to be able to hit them like multiple times and get out of range. And the thing is, as well, when he fought I think it was Gassiev in the World Boxing Super Series. He's a heavy-handed puncher. And he caught Usyk a few times, and, you know, he wasn't fazed. Right. And you got to remember that Usyk was also fighting a lot of these guys in the amateurs.
Right.
So.
That's true. Yeah. But, yeah.
And also, at heavyweight, he's got one of the people that, you know, if Usyk has ever struggled in one fight in his career so far, it was Michael the Bounty Hunter, who also has moved up to heavyweight. And obviously, I was speaking to his coach, Hazim Rahman, at Fantasy Springs a few weeks back. And he was telling me about one of the reasons that he moved Michael Hunter up to heavyweight was because of, as an amateur, he was fighting a lot of these big guys in the amateurs. And, you know, he was never struggling with them. So, and also, I can imagine it's, you know, it's where the money is with Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder. If you're in and around that weight category, why wouldn't you move up there, you know? Mm-hmm. That's where the big bucks is. And that's, you know, if you're going to go into the ring and put your life on the line, you might as well go in there and do it for the big money.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, but, you know, I think the Ukrainians are going to be Usyk, Lomachenko, those guys. They're going to be in control of the sport for quite a while.
The Nail, obviously.
The Nail. I forgot about the Nail.
The Nail, that's true. Obviously, I got confused. He's actually trained by Teddy Atlas, not Lomachenko.
I think that's a common mistake. I don't think you're the first or the last person.
He trains up in Oxnard as well.
Yeah, I don't think you're the last person to make that mistake.
At least I corrected it.
At least you corrected it. Yeah. But honestly, I probably would have made the same mistake. Yeah. And I'm sure there's other people who are listening right now are like, ah, shit. Like I thought it was the same. Like, you know, they learned something new.
Yeah.
So, you know, moving on to the big one, the big prize. You know, we're not going too in depth in terms of like, you know, specifics in terms of round of the year, you know, stuff like that. Like, we're kind of trying to keep it as general as possible, you know, not go too crazy. I mean, maybe we can do like honorable mentions at the end. But let's go to Fighter of the Year. Who do you got?
I think most media, boxing media, have picked the same guy, and I don't think you can really look anywhere else. I think it's pretty cut and dry. Alexander Usyk, you know, had an amazing 2018 in January, the World Boxing Super Series semifinals. He traveled to Riga, Latvia, to fight in Meris Bradis.
Latvian.
To fight Meris Bradis in his own backyard, won a majority decision to unify two of the major world titles in the cruiserweight division. July of 2018, World Boxing Super Series final, Usyk traveled to Moscow to face two-time belt holder Murat Gassiev on the Russians' home turf again. Yep,
exactly.
Cruised to a virtual shutout to unify all four of the major titles. Great performance, because I think people were kind of wondering whether, you know, if Gassiev could catch Usyk. You know, it really was a boxer puncher.
That was the ultimate definition in that fight.
And it got to the point where Usyk was so skillful, the fight was actually quite boring because he was just dancing around him. And then again, to end out the year, he went all the way to Liverpool. No, sorry, he went to Manchester, England to fight Liverpoolian Tony Bellew, former cruiserweight title holder. And sensationally, one punch knockout in the eighth round to put down and retire Tony Bellew.
That was a nasty knockout too.
Yeah, so
nasty knockout.
I don't think you can really look anywhere else apart from Usyk.
You know what?
Danny Z.
As much as I want to disagree with you, just throw it in your face, I'm going to have to agree with you.
The only other one you really could have looked at, but I don't think you had enough fights that year, would have been, obviously, Tyson Fury.
Well, I mean, Tyson, besides Wilder.
Exactly. That's his only problem. If he had had maybe a few more like fights.
No, the only person... I was considering, but I'm giving it to Usyk because he fought one more fight than him,
mm-hmm.
was Mikey Garcia. Because Mikey moved up to 140, got a title up there by stopping Lipinitz. Did he stop him or was it a decision?
He dropped him, but it was a decision.
He dropped him, but it was a decision. That's right. That's how I got confused. He got a title at 140, came back down, unified, and beat Easter. I think that was very impressive. That was very impressive. But like you said, I'm tipping it to Usyk because he fought three times and it was in the final of the World Boxing Super Series. And Then he went against Tony Bellew. And like you said, he essentially retired him with a nasty knockout.
What about Lomachenko, though?
Well, he fought, what, Linares and...
Jose Pedraza.
Pedraza. Yeah. I mean, I like I said, you know, in terms of...
But you just think, how big was that Linares fight? You had two...
No, yeah. Two. I agree. But I'm looking in terms of how because I thought about that, but how I was weighing it in terms of Mikey and Lomachenko's career trajectory in 2018
mm-hmm.
is Pedraza, yeah, he was a world champion, but, you know, at the end of the day, and now I sound like Adrian Broner, Lomachenko stayed at 135. Yes, the Linares fight was between two of the best fighters at that weight division, which was great. It was an exciting fight. Lomachenko got dropped, then he ends up stopping Linares. That was an exciting fight. I love that fight. And then he fights Pedraza and stuff like that. But I tip it to Mikey and when comparing those two, because Mikey moved up to 140. So he went up to a division above him
mm-hmm.
and got a belt. Then he came back down and he unified against a guy who was like 6 inches taller than him. So I tip it. I tip it in terms of skill. I mean, maybe Lomachenko fought the more talented guys in terms of skill. So like I said, it kind of, it's apples and oranges. It depends on how you look at it. But I would tip it to Mikey in terms of if I had to choose between him and Lomachenko as fighter of the year.
Another one I kind of looked at was...
But we're not going that. We're going Usyk. Just so people know.
We're going Usyk. But I looked at... when I was trying to think of people at the time was the monster, Inoue. Obviously, he moved up.
People forget about him, too, because he needs to fight in the States more, man.
I think that's his problem, because obviously he was the super flyweight title holder in 2017. 2018, he moved up to bantamweight, fought Jamie McDonald. Blew him out in the first round, took his WBA title from him, and then fought Juan Carlos Payano, which at the time, people were kind of like, hey, Payano's, he's no slouch, you know, Inoue's going to have trouble with that guy. Boom. First round knockout again. Blink and you'll miss it.
Right.
No, he's taken over the bantamweight division, but like you say, I think his problem is, you know, he needs to come over to, you know, the big boxing countries, you know, he needs to fight in Britain, maybe go over, fight some bantamweights over over to the US, get some exposure.
But I mean, like, you know, is he one of those guys that, yeah, he's a world champion, but is he one of those guys that, like, his talent and his knockouts and how he just crushes people is his downfall because all these other fighters and promoters don't want to match up their guys against him because they're like, well, shit. Like,
I think that's what he was good at, that he got himself into the World Boxing Super Series because people can't duck him. You know, being in the tournament, you know, he wins, he goes to the next round. He wins, he goes to the next round. You know, they can't hide away. So, you know, hopefully he's going to get to the World Boxing Super Series and, you know, we'll have a big fight in the final. And, you know, he could unify a couple of the titles in that tournament and then come out and, you know, if he's got the titles, then obviously, you know, some of the people can't dodge him because he's going to have to, you know, the mandatories.
Right.
But like you say, you know, the bantamweight division at the minute is looking like one of the stronger divisions. You got, you know, Lurish Neri, Nonito Donaire, Tete.
And Donaire came out of nowhere. He's kind of reinvigorating his career again.
Yeah, he got that victory, obviously, you know, medically, I guess, over Ryan Burnett.
Yeah.
Because his back went.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, you know, even still, like, you know, he's like back in the fold now, you know, like.
Yeah.
You know, so hopefully, I like Nonito Donaire. I kind of hope he finds that spark again and he can go out there and put on some great fights.
He's one of those nice guys at the spot, I guess, isn't he?
He is. He is. Yeah, I've interviewed him a couple times. He's always been a nice guy. Very humble guy. He lives over there in Vegas too, so he's not too far from us. But
any excuse to go to Vegas, you know?
Yeah, any excuse to go to Vegas. But like we said, we're going Usyk. Is it more of a who was your second? Did you have any trouble deciding on Usyk or?
No, not really. When you look at the how many fighters go to people's backyards, you know, even though, you know, he could have maybe have made Tony Bellew come over to the US because, you know, he was pretty much the undisputed title holder before he fought Tony Bellew, because Tony Bellew had obviously relinquished those to go up to, well, he'd relinquished the WBC to go up to fight at heavyweight. But, you know, he still decided to come over to England to fight him. I imagine, you know, trying to get some more exposure and get his name out there before he tries to fight Anthony Joshua.
Yeah.
And obviously, I think, you know, when you've got the amateur pedigree like they do, you know, fighting 200-300 times as an amateur, you're going to different countries all the time. You go to different cities all the time. So fighting in someone's backyard, I think, to somebody that has such an established amateur background, I don't think it really affects them. They're used to it from a young age.
I agree.
So I think that's why some of the people like, you know, Lomachenko, Usyk, you know, people like that have had such a huge background and fought all over, it doesn't trouble them at all.
Right.
Well, other pros don't want to fight anywhere but Vegas. Like Floyd Mayweather, I'm fighting in Vegas. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously, that's probably due to the low tax as well. But,
oh, yeah, they got no state income tax. So, you know, you get to keep more of your money.
Exactly.
Which kind of going on a side note for that, you know, I know this is a boxing show, but there was a recent UFC event that just happened. John Bones Jones. They were supposed to be in Vegas. That's supposed to be at the T-Mobile Arena. And they found some type of metabolite in his system again, but they said it was from the previous test, like over a year and a half or 2 years ago.
I went to the fight.
In Vegas?
No, it was in LA, wasn't it?
Oh, the Forum.
Yeah.
Forum. So, you know, Vegas wouldn't sanction him or something, so they came to California, and then the Athletic Commission, Andy Foster is the executive director of California, CSAC, you know, was able to let him fight, and I know people are scrutinizing him and stuff, but you know, there was measures put in place, and he is taking, strict, you know, testing even after the fight for, like, there's an agreement in place. So a lot of people are like, oh, you know, he's just giving him a pass. But there is fine print in why he was let fight. He was able to fight. But, you know, really quickly, we talk about Floyd always fighting in Vegas because no state income tax. A couple of these fighters were talking about after the post-fight at the UFC event over here at the Forum, we're talking about like, oh, now I have to pay state income tax over here in California.
Which is about 30%.
Yeah, it sucks.
Gone from 0 to 30%.
So that's one thing you got to look forward into California.
Happy Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Happy holidays. But, you know, we have the beach, we have mountains, we have Hollywood, we have San Diego, we have, you know, essentially, we're probably the fight capital of the world. I mean, you know, England has their stuff and everything. And but in terms of the West Coast, from Vegas to Southern California, we're essentially the fight capital of the world. But, you know, there's a price we have to pay, and it's called taxes. So that's always going to get us. It's always going to get us. But why did we mention Floyd fighting in Vegas? With no state income tax? I forgot.
About Usyk going to people's backyards to fight.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
To get fights.
That's right, yeah. Well, that's what you got to do. I mean, that's what you got to do. But, you know, going on, I know we were going to go into more categories, but for knockout of the year, do you want to do any honorable mentions?
Ooh, for knockout of the year? Honorable mention, probably Wilder Ortiz.
I really like that one. That uppercut was nasty.
The one you kind of touched on, Usyk and Tony Bellew.
Yep.
That was a good one.
Teofimo Lopez,
the, you know, 40 seconds against Mason Menard. Dillon White against Lucas Brown.
Yeah.
Over White in England, that was a pretty good one. Jermell Charlo, second round KO of Hugo Santano.
That was pretty nasty too.
One we just touched on actually briefly, Inoue, first round knockout against Juan Carlos Payano.
Yeah.
That was pretty good as well.
I mean, there was a lot. There was a lot, but, you know, I think as we keep growing over here at the Last Round, we'll be able to expand our categories as we move forward. But you know, I really like that Wilder Ortiz one.
You're picking that as your favorite?
I think so. Because that, you know, like I said, I try to take into account everything. You know, it was a heavyweight matchup between two of the best heavyweights in the world, like top five. You know, Wilder was dazed like a couple rounds before, which I don't know how he stood up. I don't know how he stayed up from those shots, but and then he ends up dropping him a couple times and finally gets him with that uppercut. And you know what? You never see Wilder give uppercuts, which was surprising just to see it. You know, he's one of those windmill punchers, and I mean, yeah, people rag on it, but you know, it's effective and it works for him. So but yeah, that right hook, that right uppercut hook that he got Ortiz with, and then Ortiz's legs just collapsed. Man, that was, and then you know, it was accompanied by the commentary from Mauro Ranallo of Showtime Boxing, which I like him. He has a very unique voice. I'm going with Wilder stopping Ortiz. You know, and these are just like honorable mentions. We weren't really like gonna touch on these, but I'm going with that one.
I think I'm gonna go with a British fight.
Of course you are.
I'm gonna go with Dillian Whyte, Derek Chisora 2.
Recently.
A recent one. Because like you say, looking at the totality of the whole fight, it was a fight that Dillian Whyte didn't have to take. You know, I think everybody had kind of thought that Eddie Hearn had penciled Dillian Whyte into the April 13th.
Which I still think is gonna happen.
Exactly. Against Anthony Joshua. So, you know, him and Derek Chisora didn't get on. He'd had the first fight, which was very close. You know, a lot of people actually thought Derek Chisora had won that. Chisora came into this fight, the second fight, looking a lot healthier. You know, he started at quite a good work rate and he was actually winning on the cards going into the 11th round, where eventually, you know, it looked like Dillian Whyte had kind of thought that Chisora was going to fade. And you could see that obviously he was kind of running out of energy a little bit, but still at the time, it looked like Dillian Whyte might have left it too late. You know, yeah. There was only the 11th round and the 12th round to go.
Yeah.
And it was going to be close on the scorecards.
I think, he's lucky that he got that knockout.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
So lucky.
So, you know, he takes him out. It was a kind of a brutal knockout. You know, Chisora was laid out for quite a while, you know, on his back. Luckily, you know, both fighters ended up being okay. But like you kind of looked at before, the totality of the fight, I thought that Dillian Whyte, you know, went into 11th, needing the knockout, got the knockout. And, you know, everything ended up okay for him in the end, because he could have just stayed at home, bided his time and waited for that big money fight with Anthony Joshua in April. So,
yeah,
to me, I think that was up there as one of the knockouts of 2018. It was between that and, you know, I did like the Teofimo Lopez one, but I think just that knockout that late in the game.
Yeah.
Was to me a better overall fight.
Sealed the win for him
because he needed it.
Yeah.
I don't even know whether he knew that he needed it.
I wonder.
You know, some fighters sometimes think they're doing so well that, you know, that, hey, I've got it in the bag. I can kind of cruise through. But, you know, obviously he gets a knockout. And then I think it was on two of the judges actually had Chisora ahead.
I remember that.
So he
lucked out by stopping him.
Yeah, so he did need it.
He lucked out. But, you know, that's our end of the year awards. From the last round, even though it is 2019, but these were all 2018 awards. So eventually we're going to do 2019. Hopefully we get to do it in December, but you know, it could be a year from now and at the first week of January again. But you know, thanks again for listening, whether you're Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Castbox, Audio Boom, whatever. You know, we're eventually going to start, actually, we're debating it, which, I mean, we might actually do it, but we're eventually going to start filming our episodes and uploading them live to YouTube, or, you know, after we film them and, you know, get them edited or whatever we need to do. But it is a lot of work.
We'll probably do a run out of one over the next few weeks. Just to trial and error to make sure.
Test it out.
You know, obviously, we want it to be a good product if we're going to put it out there. So,
yeah.
We'll have to get Joel on it.
Yeah, Joel, our glorious audio engineer, and also the owner of One Music Studios over here in Southern California. So if you need anything going, come check him out. Great studio for podcasting, music, bands, whatever you need. He's got it all. But thanks again for listening to episode 15 of The Last Round. Mike, what do you got?
Thank you for listening over 2018. Hopefully we'll be on to bigger and better things. We've got a few guests lined up. Hopefully maybe have one in next week. Obviously next week we've got Caleb Pran against Jose Uzcategui, and then the week after that
we Devin Haney fights next week too.
And Devin Haney, and then obviously the week after that we have
So does first. Dominic Wade. I think he fights on Devin Haney's card.
Would you say it's the first big fight 2019? Pacquiao Broner?
Oh yeah, January 19th.
That's the first big one. So obviously the week after that, Pacquiao Broner.
Yeah, and we'll get on that as we get closer to that date. We'll talk about that fight. But like I said, thanks again for listening. I'm Danny Z for Michael Shepard. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This